everyone. You're listening to a conversation with Anousheh Ansari. Anousheh is the first female private space explorer, first astronaut of Iranian descent, first Muslim woman in space, and fourth private explorer to visit space. Anousheh is the CEO of XPRIZE, which designs and operates incentive competitions to solve humanity's grand challenges, and they're currently focused on closing the gender data gap. So the audio from our conversation can get a bit staticky, but we really enjoyed chatting with her and wanted to share it with you.
I knew it was a very difficult and unimaginable thing to do for a young girl from Iran to go to space. Let me start with XPRIZE because it has been an adventure that started a long time ago when I joined the foundation to sponsor the first ever competition, which was to open up access to space, which was a dream I had since I was a young girl. I saw that the competition was not only a way to make that possible for someone like me, but something that would last into the future and hopefully make this into an industry that will open up for everyone, all the young girls like me who dream of going to space. I'm so glad that I was able to join and with my family support the foundation in its very, very early days where there were just a handful of people, including the founder, Peter Diamandis, who came up with the idea. The foundation's been around 25 years, and I've been participating and part of it for close to that long. The competition became a way of really activating the entire world to imagine a future where space travel is possible and to imagine that, yes, they can build spaceship in their garage. And that's the magic of XPRIZE, making people believe in a hopeful future, to believe that even the most unthinkable things, the most difficult problems can be solved with the ingenuity of human beings. And yes, if we were able to build spaceship in our garages and go to space, there are no problems on this planet we cannot solve. The success of the first prize, which took a long time, frankly, almost 10 years for the first prize to be won, the success of that prize and the fact that that $10 million brought in $100 million of investment into the teams that eventually created a whole marketplace where you have SpaceX and Blue Origin and now many companies that are building capabilities to go to the moon. It just invigorated and created a new industry, a private space industry that didn't even exist. Now you have tens of billions of dollars worth of a marketplace that was created because of all the policy changes and the awareness that was created. And that magic that we've captured back then with the Ansari XPRIZE is what we've repeated with new competitions, focusing on environment, focusing on other issues that are around us, whether it's in health, education, food supply, energy, and looking at how we can create a hopeful, abundant, equitable world for all.
You have launched a really exciting new initiative around gender.
Yes, that's one of my favorite projects. I'm super excited about it because it also relates to an area of work. Before I joined the foundation, before becoming the CEO of XPRIZE, I was a tech entrepreneur working in areas that relates to artificial intelligence, machine learning, and how these types of technologies are going to shape our future. They're already part of our everyday life and influencing decision-making of policymakers, employers, the way we design things, the way we design new drugs. So a lot of these things are already here, but many people don't know that machine learning and AI is part of our life today. What machine learning and AI use as its fuel, its data, and the information that is used to analyze and make decisions. What I realized after being involved in some conversations, discussion, and actually looking into the industry is that the data that is used is the data that has been around for many years. In the past, in most industries, women have been invisible in the design process, in the research process, which created certain biases in our society, biases in the way we detect certain diseases. For example, in US, women are more likely to die from a heart attack. One in every five women is impacted by that. And the reason is that women show symptoms differently, but there are not enough studies, so the doctors or the people in the emergency rooms may not be able to detect right away if a woman is coming in with a problem that is due to a heart attack. Or when the drugs are going through trials, there are not enough female test subjects as part of those drug studies, so there may be adverse side effects, or they may not be ineffective for a woman, or the dosages may be incorrect. And that's just few examples of a much larger problem at hand. What I hope we can do with this movement that we're creating through the awareness campaign and through the challenges we're going to launch is to change industries and policy making and the way people design cities, products, to include data about women and their needs and their physical conditions. So when we're in a car, we feel safe. When we're at work, we feel safe. When we're taking a medication, we feel safe. That's the work we're trying to do with our gender data initiative at XPRIZE Foundation. It's sort of an invisible problem because we don't realize it. In certain areas, data may not exist. So we're hoping that through our initiative, we'll be able to collect that data. In some areas, data is not identified properly. So the studies don't include specific analysis that include how things disproportionately impacts women in design and policies. That's a whole other story, because the way women are impacted is different. What's happening right now during the pandemic, it's a good example. Traditionally, a lot of women have been frontline health workers or in the service industry or retail industry, and they are disproportionately impacted by what's happening. Or they're usually the caretaker. If someone's sick at home or in the family, or there's an elderly in the family that needs care, usually the women are the ones providing that care. So again, disproportionately impacted. There's tons of examples like this. When we have information about it, then we can come up with policies and ways to make sure that we design things around these ways that women are impacted and help them better.
When we spoke the other day, you mentioned that space isn't prepared necessarily for women when it comes to the gear.
The story I was telling you, I wasn't personally impacted by it, but my colleagues were. A few months ago, there was a lot of excitement around the first ever all-female astronaut spacewalk. People were waiting for it. When we got closer to the date, all of a sudden it was announced that the spacewalk was canceled because we didn't have spacesuits for all the women to do the spacewalk. Everyone's like, what? The problem was not that there were not enough spacesuit. There were spacesuit, but they did not fit women. Same thing happens to firefighters or women in the police force or in the military. The protective gear usually is not designed for a female body. They're usually designed for an average male body, so they don't fit women well, and they're usually loose, so they don't really protect you. A lot of times they're actually inhibiting your movement, so people just take them off. In the spacewalk scenario, there were not enough suits for all the women to wear, so they had to actually wait to produce more spacesuits that are the size and equipped so they can protect female astronauts, so they can do an all-female spacewalk.
You, Anusha, have been making these really ambitious moves ever since you were a kid. It was a childhood dream of yours to go to space. What is it that really compels you to focus on supporting young women?
I was born in Iran. I grew up in Iran, and I came to US when I was about 16. I was fortunate. I lived in a family where I was not told that they're certain not do because of my gender. I've been gender neutral in the way I think. And ultimately, to be honest with you, my hope for the world is that in the way we treat each other, gender should not matter. We are human beings. So from one aspect, I love to see a gender neutral world. But to get to that place, we need to make sure that all different aspects of a person can be incorporated in the way we live together. It's not just gender, race, religion, everything. As a woman, as a Muslim woman, as an immigrant who came to US after the hostage crisis, as a woman in tech, as a woman engineer. I've always been in a minority position, and I've seen how difficult it is for women sometimes. If you just switch the gender and a man was in my place, they would have advanced much faster with probably less skills and less capabilities. And that's why it inspired me to see how I can. This is not my kid, by the way.
Everyone's working from home and has a new reality that they're facing.
I have a neighbor reality now. But yeah, it's one of those things that I've experienced personally. And while my approach to it is I try to just demonstrate my capability as an individual, and usually I am able to overcome whatever hurdles are in front of me because I'm hard-headed and I just push through usually. Eventually, I hope that women don't have to face those barriers over and over again. Hopefully, as a lot of women open up new doors, the next wave of young women don't have to go through the same sort of proving themselves over and over and over again. And I see that happening slowly, not fast enough for me. Making sure that at least in the area of data, we have this taken care of is when you're dealing with machines and algorithms and things that are hidden inside a box, it's hard to solve for a hidden problem. So I don't want this to become this hidden problem that will impact everything in the future. And by the time we realize what's happening, it will be too late and too difficult to solve. So that's why it was important for us to do this now at this point in time where we can actually get ahead of it.
When your team sits down to identify a challenge and create this challenge, can you walk us through what that process looks like so people understand how outside input is taken into account?
We go through a very rigorous process where we have our own team that we create. The team connects to a much wider community of experts in the topic and also experts on the fringe areas. So we can have a very collaborative effort, even bring in science fiction writers and people who can help us imagine a future where there's complete equity and diversity incorporated in every aspects of designing our world and our cities and our products. So it starts out by diving deep in researching the problem and identifying root causes. The next step is to imagine a world where these problems are solved and how that world looks, and then coming back and trying to see what are those breakthroughs, what are some of those problems that are preventing us to reach that desired future, and how can we solve them. And it's a very collaborative effort through in-person meetings, which is not happening now. Also a lot of online dialogues and conversations through the online community that we create on every topic. People can join on our website and be part of the conversation. We incorporate all these opinions. What is very important for us is framing the problem, which is sort of our secret sauce at XPRIZE, is to identify those three or four areas where if we can solve them in a very specific, measurable way, your problem will be solved.
That's fascinating that you bring in science fiction writers to put a narrative to the future so that we can imagine ourselves in it and what types of problems we might be solving. What have some of the science fiction writers written about what to expect in the future?
We've done very specific work with them. There are a few that we've published. We did a prize around the future of ocean exploration. There's stories around the technologies that were developed as part of that, and science fiction stories around exploring cities underwater or life underwater. That was a whole series of stories written around the oceans and the future of oceans. We've done similarly things around a prize that is an ongoing prize called the Avatar XPRIZE. There are a whole bunch of science fiction stories around avatars and how they will be part of our lives. And again, we look at the future with a hopeful lens because we believe that, yes, you can have all these dystopian futures where machines take over and aliens come and the world. I personally don't. I remember always dreaming of aliens coming and taking me to their beautiful worlds. And I was able to learn all these things about those worlds that are outside of our planet. So we look with a hopeful lens toward the future and technologies that can make future better, and then try to portray that through science fiction stories. I don't know if you're a Star Trek or Star Wars fan. Between those two futures, between Star Wars or Star Trek, we're the Star Trek sort of future people, where we look at a future where people come together, collaborate. Yes, there will be conflict, but through a lot of working together and collaboration, those problems can be solved.
I went to grad school in London, and while I was in London, there was a project that the National Endowment for Science, Technology and the Arts created called Future Londoners. And it created all of these profiles of future Londoners that could exist. The grandmother, the school child, the young mother, the teenager, and they illustrated what everyone would be wearing, how they would be getting around London, the students, what would their classes look like, people going to work, what is working look like, so that you could start to put yourself in that mindset and build programs for the future Londoners. As you've been doing that, what have been some of the predictions within gender, thinking about the future that we're either preparing for or trying to redirect?
We haven't done an exercise with the science fiction writers for equitable future for women, but looking at how our cities are designed, how our policies are designed, maybe I don't even have to go too far into the future. Let's pick maybe the topic of work and women. If I look around me, a lot of women are the caretakers, especially if you have a family, you're the one making sure that taking care of the family, whether it's grocery shopping or running errands. If there is a parent, usually the daughters are the ones who make sure the elder parents are okay. We live in a society where we're living longer. There will be a lot of family units that will have older parents around. A lot of these work takes time. These are hours in a day that you're spending. And I see a lot of friends who are superpower women who have full careers and have kids and families, and they take care of everyone and make sure that they somehow find hours in a day to do this. But it comes at the personal cost of their health and their mental health, their physical health. If you decide to become a full-time parent, which is great because the value of that to the family unit is amazing, but there is no financial value to that. If you have decided to become a stay-at-home parent and take care of your kid, then you retire and then something happens, you don't have any appreciation for the time and the value you brought in. Whereas if you go to work and you had hired a babysitter, that babysitter would have been paid and that time has a value associated with it. So perhaps there would be a future where policies can be made where the time you spend doing things that the society as a whole may benefit from will have a value associated where the woman who is actually providing that service and value to the society will be able to accumulate retirement benefits.
That would be amazing. Well, within this pandemic, 1 in 3 women, their jobs have been titled as essential workers. So I hope that we come out of this pandemic with a new appreciation for the work that women do, because I think oftentimes, like you're saying, it goes unappreciated because it's not within the formal labor sector. So as you guys are shaping this challenge around including more women's data in data sets so that women are part of the conversation as new policies and new technologies are developed, what are ways that people can be part of the conversation? Because something that I love that you do at XPRIZE is it's a conversation. It's very collaborative.
We would love to have anyone who wants to be part of the conversation and support us in any way possible and help us actually launch these prizes to do so. We have not gone and announced everything 100% fully publicly, but we do have our website open and some of the information is already available. As the conversation started, you can go to go.xprize.org/gender gap and you will find information about how you can join the community. You can find information about how to join our Guardian Circle, which is a group of 50,000 people around the globe that we hope become the ambassadors of this mission and support us financially. university and also become people who will talk about this initiative and create awareness and invite others to join us.
That's great. In addition to the gender initiative, XPRIZE are also creating a pandemic alliance to respond to the current pandemic.
Absolutely. Our work has been very focused on how we can create a better future for humanity. And in that sense, a lot of our work is focused on the longer term projects. However, we've launched about 17 prizes and we've been very successful in really creating breakthroughs. And as part of that, over the past 25 years, we've created an amazing network of entrepreneurs, companies who have been really fascinated with how technology can become a big part of solving big problems. This network is a very valuable network, and we wanted to, in this time of crisis, bring everyone together and use this creative energy and this desire to solve problems to focus on the COVID-19 pandemic that's causing disruption all around the world. Within a week of announcing it, we had over 50 corporations and individuals, really thought leaders in these different areas, joining hands with us. Anthem was the first one to come to us wanting to do something with XPRIZE. And together we launched the Pandemic Alliance website and invited everyone. Last week, we started weekly conversations in 12 specific areas where researchers, scientists, and companies are coming together, picking each one of these 12 areas, whether it's around the user experience as a patient or how testing can become a way for us to get back to normal, or vaccines and vaccine distributions, or other research around how the pandemics can be detected better, or how can we protect ourselves better in the future. So all these different areas are topics that we are continuously discussing to come up with both short-term solutions, but also with an eye toward future solutions that can prevent and safeguard humanity from these pandemics to ever happening again. And if you are someone who's working on any areas related to the pandemic, please join us. You can go to our main website or you can go to covid-19.xprize.org and sign up to be part of the community, participate in these weekly conversations where people are joining hands in collaborating on specific research, forming teams, and we're going to announce challenges and competitions specifically in the area of data that would be helpful to advance the research in this specific pandemic situation.
Anusha, what are some of the early observations that you and your team have made as you've been launching the Pandemic Alliance?
There are tons of activity, which is incredible. A lot of the initial focus has been on how we can get personal protective equipment to the healthcare workers and how the whole frontline healthcare system has become such an important element of protecting us all. In the past, we had not been paying enough attention to it. One area has been around how can we connect the dots to immediately take care of this immediate need. But more largely, one consensus that in all the conversation became apparent is that we really don't have a good dashboard for decision makers and policy makers to make good decisions. Everything is bite-sized information that comes in randomly. And when you're trying to make decision on one or two pieces of information, may or may not be the right decision. It's very apparent to all of us that there is a need for a very comprehensive solution, a platform that can help us now, but more importantly in the future, where it will look at a wide variety of information from demographic data, economic data, health data, and then, of course, with all the pandemic information around the disease itself, and incorporate risk factors and risk analysis science into it so you can make decisions at the right time with the best impact. So whether we should do shelter at home now or 2 weeks from now, people didn't know when to make the decisions. And yeah, sometimes they made them too late. And now we don't know when should we go back? How should we go back? There's not enough tool or information to help us make decisions. There's a big consensus that we need a set of tools that will allow us to analyze very complex set of data and information so we can make decisions at the company level, at the city level, and at the country level better.
It's so important to have all of those different actors together to create platforms where decision makers can make data-driven decisions. I'm imagining a scenario where after you guys have determined what you need, you have designers involved, you have scientists involved, you have public policymakers involved so that they can give their input on what each of these phases looks like and how you best design for them.
Absolutely. And we don't expect to design any of this at XPRIZE, but we hope that maybe we will have a challenge in one or two areas and go out there and say, hey, all you smart people out there, let's come up with it. And one thing we did create at XPRIZE is a data collaborative where we have all the data sets and very hard to find data. The teams can then get access to these data sets and create models and train their models on becoming tools that will help people make these decisions and become successful entrepreneurs who will sell this then to the communities in the future.
That's great. Whether you are a designer, a policymaker, a scientist, an attorney, your experience is relevant because this is a completely collaborative effort that has so many different stakeholders. Anusha, in your years at XPRIZE, what is your favorite solution or memory in seeing all of these different actors come together?
Well, that's a very difficult question. When I was at the launch of the Spaceship One, of course, that was a very special moment for me for many reasons, not just my personal passion, but because of the way I was involved with it from day one and seeing how it was developed from nothing. Being there at that moment, watching the takeoff of Spaceship One and almost popping out of my head with excitement and anxiety and just all those years, everyone telling us, well, what happens if someone dies, if it explodes and you're responsible. So all that on my shoulder, that's a moment I will never forget. So the launch and when they announced that they reached 100 kilometers and then once the landing happened, this was one of the best special moments for me, of course. But another one that was also very special for me last year, I got to go to Tanzania with our team just before the finals of our Global Learning XPRIZE. The Global Learning XPRIZE was about a open Android platform that would teach kids reading, writing, and basic arithmetic to someone who had no literacy at all. I was there during the final phases, which was after about 15 months of these kids having access to these solutions. There were five finalists. I got to visit two villages out of the 250 villages in the remotest area. We had to drive 2 hours in dirt roads together, and there were no homes, no electricity. The team had installed solar panels to power the tablets for the kids. And just seeing the kids' experience, they were able to write their name, they were able to do basic math, and the stories that I heard from the parents and the people in the village talking about how the kids have become the teachers of the adults and have changed the whole community and the impact that we had in those villages and the work of the teams who have come up with those software solutions that taught the kids, and the results was really very special to me.
When you think about the little girl, Anusha, who wanted to go to space, to where you are now, that's an incredible journey. As young kids, so many people dream of going to space. You went to space, you spent 11 days there. Can you walk us through what it was like spending a year in Russia, training, often isolated in that time, then being called up to go to space?
It was an incredible experience. A lot of time they say it's not the destination, it's the journey. If I ever really understood the meaning of it, it was during my year in Russia training for my mission to the space station. It was an incredible way for me to really learn about myself and learn about the whole history of space program. I was living in minimal conditions. Hot water was a luxury. Even when it came out of the faucet there, it was brown for the first 20 minutes because of rust. It was really one of the coldest winters in Russia. When you talk about Russians, people don't think about people who are very warm and friendly. But I have to tell you, the people in Star City were the friendliest, nicest people I've ever been with. At the beginning, they were not so nice about having a woman in the space program, but when they got to know me, they're so hospitable and friendly. And then I found so many interesting things that were unique in Iranian culture and the Russian culture, and even words that were similar. Mm-hmm. When I was telling them Persian word, and they will say, no, it's a Russian word. And I'm like, well, there's exactly the same. Where they originated, let's not argue, but we say the same thing. Connecting culturally with them helped connect in a different way and made the experience special. I made a lot of friends that have become lifelong friends for me. And then experience of going to space, it's something that's hard to put to words. I had imagined that all of my life, but it was better than anything I could ever imagine. Like all astronauts talk about, when you're up there, even though you're completely disconnected from planet Earth, you are in a way more connected than ever to the entire planet. Because you get to see it with a different lens. You see it as this unique, beautiful home that is the reason you're here. You live as a species in this universe. And when you look at Earth from space, it becomes so apparent that we're all united in this one home world we have, and there's nothing dividing us. There are no walls or borders or any barriers that has separated us into countries or race or all these things that divides us. If we learn anything from the pandemic, is that viruses, problems, things travel. When you're in space, you see the rotation of Earth. You see the weather pattern. You see the clouds moving. And you can see everything's carrying around. Everything's just going around and around. There's nothing that stays the same, and there's nothing that stays in one place. Everything travels. And we are connected and interconnected with each other and with our planet. It becomes obvious when you're in space, and that image of our planet and that sense of life warmth that I felt when I first saw Earth from space became this image that stays with me all the time and drives me to do my best to preserve it, to hope that we will have a home as I saw it from space, but something that everyone can see in their everyday life.
What are some lessons that you learned from being in isolation in Russia, in space, that you're applying now? People are getting restless. They're looking for suggestions for how to continue with their new normal.
When I was in Russia for a year, I was away from my family, and where I was didn't have very good internet back then, so it was hard to even stay in touch. I don't think Zoom ever existed. The important thing is to keep your mind occupied and to have some routines. For me, routines are very important. Having something in my routine that keeps my body moving. I love nature, so being able to go for a walk, get some fresh air. I'm a very curious person, so engaging in some activity that I'm learning, whether it's reading a book or a podcast. I love puzzles, so I had tons of puzzles. I took these mental books with me and books of puzzles to solve. It's occupying your mind. Of course, over there, my work was my training, so a big portion of the day was training that would occupy, and now it's my work. And then doing some fun things for yourself that you enjoy. I love ice cream, so I treat myself.
Favorite flavor?
Chocolate chip, yes.
What podcast are you listening to right now?
TED Radio Hour on NPR. I love the How I Built This, which is stories of entrepreneurs and their struggles and how they build their companies. I always learn a lot from that. I try not to listen to the ones about the virus. I listen to Freakonomics a lot, and Moth Radio Hours is something that I listen sometimes at night. They're different. This American Life. Wait, don't tell me.
Are they listening to podcasts?
Not all at the same time. I also love audiobooks. I go for walks sometimes or on a treadmill and I listen to audiobooks.
Well, Anusha, thank you so much for spending time with us. I am so inspired by the work that you're doing and love that there's an opportunity for everyone who is listening to get involved.
Thank you.